Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. I'm Paula. Slavery shames humankind. It indelibly stains the present moment as it does the past. Our guest, Lawrence Hill, is part of a long and noble tradition, writers defying the atrocity of slavery by giving voice to the enslaved. In the United States, the name of Mr. Hill's internationally acclaimed novel is Someone Knows My Name. Why that title? Because Mr. Hill says,
if you have a name, and if other people know your name, it's really an assertion of your own humanity. And when you think of it, the first form of literature created by African Americans and African Canadians is a memoir. This is who I am. This is my name. This is when I was born. And I'm going to assert my humanity by putting it down on the page for you to read. And this is my way of proving to you that I'm equally human. And so the name is so critical. And of course, the concept of someone knows my name runs through this book. It's about humanity. It's about having your name recognized.
Lawrence Hill is a widely admired and well-traveled Canadian writer. He explores the experiences of African Canadians in many arenas, nonfiction as well as fiction. Mr. Hill won the international competition for the prestigious 2008 Commonwealth Writers' Prize with his novel Someone Knows My Name. It was published in Canada as The Book of Negroes. His film Seeking Salvation won the American Wilbur Award for Best National Television Documentary. He called his best-selling memoir of his immigrant American parents, a black father and a white mother, Blackberry Sweet Juice. And Mr. Hill's nonfiction ranges from The Deserter's Tale, which was released around the world, to his work as a reporter for the Globe and Mail and parliamentary correspondent for the Winnipeg Free Press. Lawrence Hill's accomplishment with Someone Knows My Name was so powerful that we redirected a trip of our own to connect with him in Charlotte, North Carolina. Lawrence Hill, I am absolutely smitten by stories, and have always been. And I used to worry that the world would run out of stories. I don't worry about that anymore. I am in awe of the authors of stories, and I wonder where in the world you found the audacity to bring Pilgrim's Progress and Odysseus and all the adventure stories ever written and all the girl stories and the boy stories and put them all on the back of one little girl in the middle of Africa. Where did you get the nerve to do that?
Well, you know, you don't really want to think about nerve when you're writing. You'll become nerveless and be paralyzed and unable to go forward. So really, it's sort of little bitty steps. And
where did you dream her into existence?
Well, I dreamed her into existence, Paula, when I heard about the exodus of 1,200 African-Americans who were leaving Halifax and going to found the colony of Freetown in Sierra Leone in 1792.
Where did you hear about that? Because I only learned about it in the last couple of years. It was not common knowledge at all.
No, it's fascinating when you think about it. People know about Marcus Garvey, Irving Black, people who moved, quote-unquote, back to Africa in the early 1900s, and they know about Americans forming the colony of Liberia in the early 1800s, but nobody has heard that way before either of these two events, the first Back to Africa movement in the history of the Americas originates from the shores of Halifax, Nova Scotia, with 1,200 African Americans leaving.
That would
Halifax.
Be African Americans.
Americans who have become African Canadians, and who have been so disgruntled by their time in Canada that they leave what they thought was a promised land. They go to found this colony of Freetown. So when I learned in reading a sort of a little known history text about 20 years ago about this movement, I started to imagine a woman's life caught up in this journey, because I discovered that not only were 1,200 African Americans leaving and going from Halifax to Freetown, Sierra Leone, but many of them were going back. Many of them had been born in Africa and were traveling back. And at that point, the seed of the novel started to germinate in me.
20 years ago?
About, yeah. I sat on it while I wrote six other books, and I didn't feel ready to write a woman's story, a back to Africa story, a story that sort of encompassed a woman's life around the world. I just wasn't ready for it yet, so I just sat on it for 15 years and wrote six other books first.
What were the six books?
Well, some novels and some nonfiction.
I guess I want that in a more specific way. Six books, that's a lot of books. Are you
the rest of your writing, what I know several of them are novels, but what do you do for 15 years while this is cooking that germinates further into that story? Are those other books feeding you through that 15 years?
Well, sure they are. They're feeding me, and I mean...
Paying the bills feeding you.
I understand. Are they feeding me creatively, and is the muse sort of being stoked, and is the story of Aminata building? Sure it is. She's gestating. She just had a long gestational period. And in the meantime, I'm just writing about other things and also sort of finding my way into a woman's voice. I mean, it took me some time before I felt ready to give a whole novel over to a woman, because she carries a book from the first word to the last. It's, some novels, of course, have rotating points of view or different characters carry different chapters. She carries a whole book, and so I really needed to feel grounded inside her skin. I think I needed to have my own children before I could write this book. I needed to think of this girl who becomes a woman as my own daughter. I gave her my own daughter's middle name, actually. And so I think I needed to have children first before I could really love this character enough to write about her.
Literally, it's as if she is every woman. I've seen a lot of... I've read a lot of books in my life, Larry. And I've always thought of them as sort of the pieces of a puzzle. And we came across Simon Sharma's book, Rough Crossings, just a couple of years ago in, 2005 or six, something like that. Totally new, as you say. Had no idea. And I've read lots about the original sin that's America, but I hadn't thought about it also being Canadian. I knew about the Brits, had a little problem with slavery. But it's almost as if you've turned a telescope around and all of this huge experience is coming back up, growing anew from, you call her Aminata. I have a young woman friend, and I'll tell you about her later, who spells her name almost the same and calls her Aminata. What does Aminata mean?
Aminata is her name, and it's just a very common Muslim name in West Africa. I think it might mean the peaceful one, but she is quite peaceful in her demeanor. She could have become hateful or suicidal or murderous or just eaten up by bitterness given the tumultuousness and the oppression that she faces in much of her life, but she wants to love and she wants to live and she wants to live lovingly.
Yeah.
But the name is a very common name in Muslim West Africa, and certainly in my many travels working as a volunteer in various West African countries, I came across the name frequently. It's almost as common as Mary in North America. So.
Well, and then you...
It's a beautiful name.
During the process of her travels, a number of times she gets stuck with Mary. And there's a kind of a nice echo there, isn't it?
Well, she doesn't want to be called Mary. She wants to hang on to her name. And sometimes her name is abbreviated to Mina. For people who can't manage Aminata, that doesn't bother her quite as much. But she's not going to have somebody calling her Mary. No.
Indeed not. Someone knows my name is what you call this beautiful person's story. A much bigger story than just hers. Lawrence Hill will be back in just a moment. We trust that our audience will be with us too.